Before we start this episode, I want to give a huge shout out to all of our patrons over on patreon.com/bitterbrownfam. So you can find the link in our description to support us. Special shout out to Flora, who just became a patron like 2 weeks ago. And an even bigger shout out to our BFF tier, that is Cristian Galindo, Emily Preciado, and Cassandra Tapia. Y'all have been long-time supporters, and I like have mad love for y'all for sticking through us, through all these years. If you also want to support this podcast, like keeping independent, go to patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. The link in the description. You can find almost a decade of bonus content, which includes, deleted episodes, right? Like we deleted the first couple episodes that we ever recorded. You find a history of extended episodes and video episodes. You also find every episode from season 2 and 3 in video format. You will find bonus episodes and other goodies all over the place. So if you want to be part of that, go to patreon.com/bitterbrownfems. Link in the description. And let's start the show. All right, we're doing it live, y'all. Hello, hello, hello. I am your host, Ruben, coming to you from Portland, Oregon. And today's recession indicator is the fact that Jimmy Fallon had convicted rapist Conor McGregor on his show. Conor McGregor, if you don't know him, is a UFC fighter who just a couple of years ago was convicted of rape, was found guilty, had to pay his victim something like 250,000 pounds or euros, then tried to get that appeal, so try to get his fucking money back, only for his appeal to be denied. Because the way in which this fighter, Conor McGregor, abused his victim was so grotesque that there was just like medical evidence everywhere. And the fact that Jimmy Fallon's bitch ass had him on his show and never, like, first of all, period, like, just had him on the show, period, bad enough. But, there's a way to do this that you could be critical of someone, right? Like, if he gave him the Barbara Walters like treatment of some shit, but no, it was just a straight up like celebrity spot on his show. Jimmy Fallon is so fucking soulless and must be so broke. And maybe this is becoming the how broke are you celebrity? Because like how broke are you, Jimmy Fallon, that you who have daughters brought a rapist onto your show? Not even like an accused rapist that was found, not the mar first of all, the system hates survivors so much that like it barely ever persecutes, convicts rapists. The fact that one of them was found guilty and had to pay for his fucking actions is just a milestone on its own and like indicative of how bad things were. But the fact that you brought on this piece of shit onto your show, Jimmy Fallon, it just shows that you are like literally the scum of the universe. You must be so in debt, so broke that you needed this guy's PR money. I cannot imagine being not only so utterly broke, but morally bankrupt, which is what really matters here. As that old tweet says, all the people I love who are poor are struggling, are victims of capitalism. All the bitches I hate are broke bitches. And that's what you are, Jimmy Fallon. To bring a rapist onto your show and uncritically be a PR machine for him, you have no decency. But what did we expect from a man that had Trump on his show and joked and hee-hawed with him and petted his hair and now became a symbol of things, right? While we have all these other liberal motherfuckers like struggling with, and not even like, and I'm saying liberal motherfuckers because they are so centrist, and I'm talking about Jimmy Fallon and Stephen Colbert. I mean, not Jimmy Fallon, Jimmy Kimmel and Stephen Colbert, out here in their late night talk shows, like being canceled and being pulled off the air for doing some milquetoast like criticisms of Trump or jokey jokes about Trump. You are over here fucking bending over for Trump and bending over for rapists. And mind you, like, who was it? Either it was like Jimmy Kimmel or Stephen Colbert, whose like networks were actually tied to Paramount, who is like, whose owner are buddy buddy with Trump. You are not even part of that machine. It is your character. You willingly do this for bad people. You are a bad person, Jimmy Fallon. And I just like, just like proof that entertainment doesn't matter. Like, straight up. Like, there was an essay that like talked about how like you are the epitome of like the dead end of entertainment. And I just cannot imagine ever being so morally bankrupt that I would bring a rapist onto my show. And so that is the recession indicator when rich motherfuckers wear multi-million dollar contracts, who have job security, bring rapists onto their show. So either you're broke as hell or you support rapist Jimmy Fallon. Call in to prove otherwise. Yeah. Whew. Where to even go from here? I am going to try to lighten the situation. And I'm going to talk about the Grammys for a second. As you know, I'm a huge music lover and I do follow awards. We pretty much always have awards coverage on this podcast. And I mean, that's for a lot of reasons, like art. First of all, I fucking love art. I am a huge defender of art. And art dictates where we are, where we could be. And these award shows matter because they like dictate where our culture can actually go and where our society is as far as like what we find acceptable. So like, recent, like in the last week or so, the Grammys released some new categories for their award shows. And something you have to understand is that, like, yes, all the other Grammys matter. All the Grammys matter on some level, but the ones that really matter are like the big five, which are like, you know, album of the year, record of the year, song of the year. I mean, those are the big three. Record of the year, song of the year, album of the year, best new artist. I forgot the last one, but I mean, those have a huge boost into people's career and kind of dictate the way the music industry goes. And in the past, the Grammys have created categories to keep marginalized, like artists of color, primarily women, out of those big categories, out of the general categories, right? There's also like genre categories that are big, right? So there's like rock album, you know, pop album, and those were seen as mainstream. Then for a long time there was a urban album, urban song, blah blah, and those are meant to put black artists at a lower tier than the rest of the white artists that were nominated that year. So for example, like Beyoncé is the most winningest artist in Grammy's history. However, most of her wins are in quote unquote urban categories, right? So they're even like they're like, you know, best urban contemporary or best R&B, best hip hop sung duo, things like that, things that like signify to the audience, to record labels that this is not mainstream. Things that are don't even sound like hip hop or R&B are labeled as such, right? So some of Tyler, the Creator's music was labeled as like rap album, like or best hip hop album. And one of the biggest like what the fucks is like Beyoncé's Single Ladies, one of the biggest pop albums or best pop songs of ever created, was labeled as a hip hop song, an R&B song. If you listen to that beat, that is a fucking alternative ass pop beat that Bjork would love to get her hands on. Like, that is not an R&B album. But because she is black, the Grammys were able to categorize her in that area so as not to give her one of the bigger awards, right? So that's just like a preface thing, right? Because what just happened recently, which I will get to with the Grammys, is part of a bigger effort of things, right? So in the last week, the Grammys released two new categories, and those were best alternative Latin category. Best Aladdin song, which was like a way to get like Latinx Spanish speaking artists like out of the contention for best song, period. Best Asian American pop music performance, which is a way to get K-pop artists out of the best song contention. Then there we have best R&B collaboration or duo group performance, which is a way to get like the best rap song collaboration. So if you so it's a way to get like black artists out of the contention for the best pop rap song duo or the best duo collaboration, and put them into this racialized category, right? And that's wild, like that we like the Grammys, like just like in 2020, did a thing where they were trying to like mix up their voting body. And now we've returned to a phase where that has been nullified essentially, because they find new racist way to get around stuff. And that's like so indicative of like the way these systems work, right? The way neoliberalism works is that they give concessions to when like the moment is hot, but then when things cool off, they go back, they fight as hell to go back to conservative ways. And so we have a couple new categories to get people of color out of, and these are specifically targeting Black, Asian, and Latinx folks, right? The other two new categories are best traditional pop vocal performance and best traditional folk album. This also reminds me that after Beyoncé won Album of the Year with a country album, they inserted a new category that was best like alternative country album. Mind you, Beyoncé's country album was not even that alternative compared to Kacey Musgraves that won Album of the Year like in 2019. In an upset that like shocked everybody, because Janelle Monáe should have won that year for Dirty Computer. But that was an alternative, like ass country album. And like, all love to Kacey Musgraves, but that turned me off of her music so much that I'm just like, fuck, racism won again, because like this bitch that I love still, even though I love Kacey Musgraves, she still be like an album deserves so much more than her because of racism. And like, I couldn't even enjoy Kacey Musgraves' music anymore. But this alternative country album category wasn't even created after an actual alternative country album won. It was after Beyoncé, who's a black artist, won. And similarly with this Best Latin Song shit, like it only happened after Bad Bunny won Album of the Year. So they're gonna keep doing the type of shit that keeps pushing marginalized artists out of the mainstream in order to like just make this like homogenized, like cookie cutter white ass music industry. And so that's like really upsetting. Mind you, we also have the whole fucking Latin Grammys, which were essentially created to like keep Latinx folks out of the mainstream Grammys or Spanish speaking folks out of the Grammys as we were gaining ground. And especially in like gaining momentum in pop culture. And mind you, even those are problematic because like when Rosalía released Moto Mami, she won all the fucking Latin Grammys, even though she's not Latin American. That bitch Spaniard as fuck. And like now she's over here not being Latina anymore, you know, trying to be taken seriously, quote unquote, as a fucking classical music artist, even though this last album, Lux, really sucked ass. But everybody's all over it because they want to seem like they are music peacocking. Shout out Slater for coining that term. But yeah, like, I am so upset at this move that the Grammys made to like further take opportunities from artists that could really use them. But I digress. It is Pride Month, right? And I haven't really acknowledged that in this pod. And that's because this year doesn't really feel like Pride. You know, before like Trump's first term, we were all like, you know, fuck corporate pride, blah, blah. And I always was like, yes, all of that. But also, if they're not showing support, that also can go very badly. And that is kind of where we are right now. Not only are like brands not really outward in their pride campaigns, but now we have things that have been long-standing or that have been understood, such as pride nights at sporting events. Being protested by their very own players. Just recently, the San Francisco Giants had a pride night. Again, San Francisco, the gayest city in America, allegedly. Three out of five pitchers not only refused to wear the pride gear, but wrote a Bible verse over. Actually, no, restart. So, out of the five pitchers, three of them wore the pride kit, but they wrote a Bible verse over the cap, over the rainbow part that was like the Noah verse about like the rainbow, you know, was God's gift to humanity to promise that he'll never drown us all again. Right. One of them straight out refused to wear the rainbow gear, and the last pitcher, he fully wore it. So much has fallen out because of that. Like the Major League Baseball team, didn't suspend them, didn't punish them, it gave them a warning. Mind you, they completely blacklisted Colin Kaepernick for merely, you know, taking a knee during the national anthem in football. There's not really any out baseball players in this fucking league. It is bad enough that you are courting queer dollars, but you can't even do the very minimum of having your players respect this event that didn't need to happen. Nobody was begging for a pride night at the SF Giants game or any of these other baseball fucking games. You're doing it because you're courting the money from the gay community. But then you're gonna go ahead and like essentially misquote the Bible because who do they have on their side? These baseball players. They had the Trump administration, they had JD Vance being like, we don't need to do this type of shit anymore. And by that, they mean Pride Night. That was JD Vance. On gay people's side, we have priests who are like, actually, Noah's bit and the scripture overall is about loving other people. And if you can't get with that, then you need to reassess how you understand the Bible, because nowhere in this Bible does it say that that hate is like the way. And that's what's like always has pissed me off about Christianity is that like it's never. In America, at least in conservative circles, there's never actually like a system by which you choose to live like a holy life or whatever. Instead, it's a system that lets you judge other people, right? And so with this whole scenario with the SF Giants, like they're playing in San Francisco, you know what gay ass city you're in. And yet you choose to do this because it's not like they wrote this scripture on their uniform all the fucking time. No, they did it to make people feel uncomfortable on the night that was supposed to be dedicated to the LGBT community. So, I mean, if you are FF Giant fan and you have tickets, I suggest you get rid of them. I suggest you boycott this fucking team. I mean, that's the best you can do. Other than that, like, if you as a queer person or as an ally continue to go to these games, after they've shown that they don't really give a fuck about LGBT folks, I don't really think you can call yourself an ally. I don't think you're really worth shit in this scenario. So that has had like a snowball effect on other things. The Philadelphia Yorks recently forfeited a game because they refused to wear the commemorative rainbow gear. And there was another team, I believe it was Arizona or Texas, where similarly the team refused to show up. And the owners essentially just had a little pride celebration. I want to remind folks, I mean, first of all, I made a video a couple of years ago, like 2018, 2019, where it focused on like the Dodger history, Dodger Stadium, and all that fucked up anti-Indigenous history. If you don't know, that stadium is built on land that was previously occupied by Indigenous folks and Chicano folks, and they were dragged out in order to build that space. But also, it was built to further segregate LA. And also, it was a sign of like the reality that baseball is the most segregated sport in America. Like, if you look at players, fans, etc., it is the whitest fucking sport in America. And this whole and homophobia being a fucking extension of white supremacy, shouldn't be like that much of a shock, but I think we all just got used to everybody kind of hiding their bigotry, at least enough to be acceptable in polite society. And it seems like we're past that point. And so, again, just be like mindful of like who you're supporting. SF Giants definitely blacklisted until all three of those motherfuckers get fired. Similarly, like a year or two ago, like the Dodgers disinvited the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence for because some like quote unquote family friendly groups like raised a stink about who these people were. Mind you, the Sisters of Perpetual Indulgence were like big like helpers during the AIDS crisis and have always showed up to moments of celebration. And just big moment in LGBT history in California, and to be disinvited by the Dodgers of all people was a real step in the face to the LGBT community. So they allegedly made up for that. They recently put up a little shrine to two LGBT players that existed in the 1900s. One of them, who I found out, died in essential destitution after coming out in the 80s, when his white partner kind of peer pressured him to come out and then took all his money. But yeah, all these like shows of like allyship don't mean anything if you're not showing up for folks like when it matters, which is the here and now. The Department of Justice is apparently investigating the owners of the SF Giants for, giving a slap on the wrist on the three bigoted players who chose not to respect Pride Night. They could have also just fucking said no. They could have said, I'm not playing today. It's against my religion, which is what the DOJ is investigating the Giant owners for, disrespecting people's, rights to religion. But it's like you knew what the event was ahead of time. And it was revealed that they were planning this protest like for weeks before this happened. So they knew this was happening and still decided to play when they could have just not played. But bigots are fucking stupid. And yeah, just watch where, as always, watch where you spend your money. Like in capitalism, that's one of the only things we can fucking do to really, have an immediate impact. Of course, there's more other things that we can do, but when it comes to situations like this, it's like boycott is like the biggest like indicator of what will actually get these people to change. Which reminds me that the city of Fresno decided to declare Nuclear Family Month during Pride Month. Let me tell you, Fresno, and if there's any Fresnoians in this chat, in this listenership, I want to apologize to you. But growing up, we always called Fresno Fresno because nobody wants to fucking be there. When I was broke as shit, taking the fucking Greyhound from LA to Davis and shit, Sacramento, I was always like, holy fuck, I can't wait to get out of this. Like, for some reason, the Greyhound always stopped for a long time in Fresno. Y'all, like, you could make literally any other month of the year your little nuclear family month, but you want it to be homophobic and you want to hide it behind family values. And it's quote unquote family values, but like, that is so disingenuous because, like, nowhere in the Bible does it tell you to hate gay people. You can't point to a fucking real, widely agreed upon verse in the Bible that's like, yeah, fuck gay people. And yet you engage in this. For what reason? Did your family bonds get tighter? What did you gain from, like, is your nuclear family so at risk that you needed a month to protect it. Because LGBT pride exists because, yes, we are very much at risk of things. Homophobia and transphobia is very alive and well. People get murdered for being queer, for being trans. The murder of a young man who was killed recently for voguing in a gas station, he was only just now convicted after years. The trans femicide, genocide, it continues. Pride Month exists because people, there's somebody in this world who believes they are better off dead than to live in their truth as an LGBT person. Pride still matters because, yes, we are under attack and we need a moment to defend it. Does that mean that your nuclear family bullshit also needs someone to defend it? And why? Who is it under attack by? Because I can tell you that trans people are under attack by trans folks, queer people are under attack by homophobic folks, bigots. Who are you under attack from? And is it perceived? As in, you think that somebody living their truths is threatening to you? If so, why? Why, if somebody living their truth as a queer person, as a trans person, why is that threatening to you? Why does that affect your family so much? And is it everyone that affects your truth? Or is it just these two types of identity? If so, why? It appears that the thing you thought was so foolproof might not be. And it's important to ask yourself why. Fresno, you are such a fucking shame to California, to LGBT folks. And all you fucking Mexicans living in Fresno who push for this, LGBT folks are just the start. They're eventually gonna come from you, for you too. You live in the fucking Central Valley, essentially. All that shit is increasingly red. So, fuck y'all, Fresno. And I'll end on something that's made me less bitter. Which has been Queer Joy. And that has been Lil Nas X coming online and saying that he got treatment for his bipolar disorder and is ready to be present again and in the spotlight. And, on this pod, not only do we really have sensitivity to bipolar folks, but we also really love Lil Nas X. We think he's a musical genius, and an important figure in pop culture. And I am straight up speaking for me and Cassandra, who's not here, who is the other co-host. And yeah, seeing him in a really good place recently really made me happy. Another thing that made me happy is seeing all of the wins that New York has had. They have Mandani, the New York for Mandanistan, formerly known as New York. Is having such a good run of things. Most recently with their wins in the NBA, the Knicks won the championship. The only game they lost in the finals was the one where Trump showed up, which is very indicative of the juju that he's carrying around with him as a rotting individual. But Mamdani held a parade and everything, tried to make nice with the owner of the Knicks, who was, all he had to do was shake Mamdani's hand, and he did such a poor job of even presenting himself and getting some free good PR that people now fucking hate him. People now know who he is and hate him because he wanted to like suck Trump's dick. And that's something that I've also learned, and it's not part of the things that made me less bitter this week, but that's something I also learned is that like men are so desperate, cishet men are so desperate to impress one another that is essentially they're doing metaphorical dick sucking at all times. And so this fucking owner of the Knicks just was so committed to sucking Trump's dick that he like missed his moment. Right, his team, the thing he funded and really devoted himself to, finally won the biggest award. And because he couldn't get over like Mamdani being the one to present him with the keys to the city and this big honor in New York City, he just threw it away. I just can't imagine being so hateful and stupid. But yeah, speaking of New York, they are having a big midterm election, and so I am going to list off the progressive slate that you should consider in this midterm. Early voted ended, but now we're on to real voting. We have for the New York City Congressional Midterm Guide for New York District 6. We have Chuck Park. For District 7, we have Claire Valdez. For New York District 10, we have Brad Lander. And for District 13, we have Tarayal Lisa Avila Chevalier, who is a really fun person to see online. Her campaign has unfolded so organically, and I'm rooting for her. We're also rooting for District 12 candidate Nina Schwab. She, is not, in the front running for anything, but they have ranked choice voting, so you can still vote for her to hopefully get her through this to the general. And yeah, that is it for me this week. We have so much to talk about next time, like Elon Musk being a trillionaire and other big things. But for now, that'll be it. And thank you for joining me. And hope to see you next week. Take care. Bye. But before we go, I want to give a huge shout out to all of my patrons, all of on patreon.com/bitterbrownfams, but especially to Fernando, to Selena, to Miranda E, to Magdalena, to Ronnie Leyva, and to Bianca Garcia. Y'all are real ones. You are in our I Know Her level tier. If you also want to be somebody that I know, join the Patreon. Patreon.com/bitterbrownfams. Link in the description. $15 means that I know you. All right. Thank you for joining me. Take care. Bye.